fair weather favored the Armada de Malacca, and gusts carried the ship southwest to the Canary Islands, off the coast of the Western Sahara. For centuries, this group of seven volcanic islands had served as a stopover for ships bound to and from the Iberian Peninsula. During those brief days in the Canaries, Magellan busied himself with the final provisioning of his fleet. He worked quickly, too quickly, as he would later discover to his horror, for the merchants of the Canaries, practiced in deception, swindled Magellan by falsifying their bills of lading. They vastly overstated the amount of supplies they sold to the fleet, and what they did sell was in poor condition. This type of cheating was common and very dangerous to the expeditions whose lives depended on the food acquired in the Canaries. After 3 busy days in one of Tenerife's harbors, Pigafetta wrote, "We departed thence and came to a port called Montrose, where we remained 2 days to furnish ourselves with pitch, which is a thing very necessary for ships." While there, Magellan heard disturbing news. The King of Portugal had dispatched not one, but 2 fleets of caravels to arrest him. Magellan also received a secret communique from his father-in-law, Diogo Barbosa, warning that the Castilian captains in the Armada de Malacca planned to mutiny at the very first chance. They might even kill Magellan to attain their goal. "Keep a good watch," Barbosa admonished. The ringleader's name came as no surprise to Magellan, Juan de Cartagena, the Castilian with blood ties to Bishop Fonseca. Magellan's concern about the safety of his fleet and his own life could only have increased as he contemplated the Portuguese ships in hot pursuit. Unwilling to give his rebellious captains further cause for alarm, he kept both warnings to himself. Under the circumstances, Magellan decided that the best course of action was to leave the Canaries immediately. Poorly provisioned, but afraid for his life and the welfare of the fleet, Magellan gave the order to raise anchor and set sail at midnight, October 3rd. Magellan ordered the fleet to take evasive action by following an unexpected course. He led the fleet southwest, hugging the coast of Africa, rather than west across the Atlantic. From the deck of San Antonio, following closely behind the flagship, Cartagena immediately challenged Magellan's orders. Why, he demanded, was Magellan following this unusual route? "Follow and do not ask questions," instructed the captain general. Cartagena continued to protest, insisting that Magellan should have consulted his captains and his pilots. Was he trying to get them all killed by following this dangerous course? Magellan did not attempt to explain. He simply reminded the other captains to follow, and that they did. The mutiny that he expected to break out at any moment failed to materialize, and order reigned aboard the ships, at least for the time being. For the next 15 days, the Armada de Malacca ran before the wind. The favorable conditions placated the irritable captains and gave Magellan time to strategize about the best way to avoid his Portuguese pursuers. But as they worked their way farther south, the weather turned foul. They had no reliable nautical charts, no idea when their miserable weather would change. Cooking fires were extinguished, the men went without sleep, and life on board the battered vessels became exceedingly precarious. The changeable winds blew the ships sideways into the troughs between waves. As the ships were tossed about, their yardarms dipped into the seething water, a prelude to a possible shipwreck. To keep from being dragged under, the captains on several occasions came close to ordering their men to chop down the masts, a desperate measure that would have disabled the fleet once the weather began to clear. Instead, they cleared nearly all their sail, offering bare masts to the relentless wind. Pigafetta wrote, "Thus we sailed for 60 days of rain to the equinoctial line." Throughout the ordeal, sharks constantly circled the ships, terrifying the crew. After weeks of constant, life-threatening storms, several hissing, incandescent globes mysteriously appeared on the yardarms of Magellan's ship, Trinidad. St. Elmo's fire! Here was a natural phenomenon to rival any fanciful supernatural apparition catalogued by Pliny or Sir John Mandeville. St. Elmo's fire is a dramatic electrical discharge that looks like a stream of fire as it trails from the mast of a ship. It can even play about someone's head, causing an eerie, tingling sensation. The superstitious sailors, always alert to omens, associated the phenomenon with St. Peter Gonzalez, a Dominican priest who was considered the patron saint of mariners and who had acquired the name St. Elmo. The fire was regarded as a sign of his protection. Once the apparition subsided, some crew members believed that supernatural powers had singled out the Captain General for a special destiny. But their deliverance from the perils of the sea proved brief, and their faith in Magellan's ability to save them would soon be tested again. 60 days of furious storms left the ships of the Armada de Malacca in need of repair and ruined a good part of the precious food supply. Magellan found it necessary to reduce rations. Each man received only 4 pints of drinking water a day and half that amount of wine. Hardtack, the staple of the sailors' diet, was also reduced to 1.5 pounds a day. As with his other decisions, Magellan did not explain why he was reducing the amount of food and drink, and no other decision he could take was as likely to cause resentment among the captains and the crew. Once the gales abated, the battered ships drifted into the equatorial calms. As the sails luffed lamely amid rising temperatures, the ships rode helplessly in the water. The rebellious Spanish captains, with time on their hands, resumed plotting against the Captain General, displaying a pointed lack of regard for the status of a man they considered their social inferior. Magellan inadvertently set the stage for their mutiny when he reminded his officers that the instructions he had received from King Charles gave him full authority over the fleet. The captain of each ship was to approach Trinidad at dusk to pay his respects to Magellan and to receive orders. Cartagena chose to defy Magellan in a studied manner. When San Antonio approached the flagship, the quartermaster, rather than Cartagena, spoke up, and worse, he refused to address Magellan by the correct title. The lowly quartermaster called Magellan Captain rather than Captain General. Magellan sharply reminded Cartagena of the proper form of address, but the Castilian captain took the opportunity to insult Magellan again. If he did not approve of San Antonio's quartermaster offering the ceremonial salute, Cartagena would select a lowly page next time. For several days after that exchange, Cartagena neglected all forms of salute. Magellan had to devise an effective way to handle Cartagena's defiant attitude or risk losing control over the entire fleet. At this tense moment, a new crisis erupted aboard Victoria. Magellan learned that Victoria's master, a Sicilian named Antonio Salomon, had been discovered sodomizing a cabin boy, Antonio Genovese. The two had been caught in flagrante delicto. Under Spanish law, homosexuality was punishable by death. As captain general of the fleet, Magellan had to take disciplinary action. But he found himself in an impossible predicament, caught between the cruelty of Spanish law and the reality of homosexuality at sea. In practice, homosexuality among sailors confined to ships over long periods of time was inevitable. There are few accounts of captains attempting to punish sailors for this behavior. Instead, they simply looked the other way. Magellan took a harsher course of action. He held a court-martial, and Salomon was condemned to death by strangulation. The deed was to be carried out several weeks hence, on December 20th. After the hearing, Magellan held a tense meeting with the other captains of the fleet in his cabin. There was Cartagena from San Antonio, Quesada from Concepcion, Mendoza from Victoria, and Serrano from Santiago. As Magellan realized, all the captains, except for Serrano, were determined to lead a mutiny. Cartagena immediately began attacking Magellan about the eccentric and dangerous course they had been following along the coast of Africa. Cartagena insisted that the only explanation for this bizarre behavior was that Magellan intended to subvert the fleet, because Magellan's true loyalty belonged with the King of Portugal. In fact, the Captain General had chosen the risky, unorthodox course to avoid the Portuguese caravels pursuing him, and was actually doing his best to frustrate Spain's enemies. Another resentment fueled Cartagena's passion for mutiny. He believed that King Charles had appointed the two of them as co-admirals of the fleet. As a Castilian loyal to his sovereign, Cartagena declared that he would no longer take orders from Magellan. Fully prepared to counter Cartagena's challenge, the captain general gave a sign and Trinidad's alguacil, or master-at-arms, Gonzalo Gomez de Espinosa, stormed the cabin. Right behind him came two loyalists, Duarte Barbosa and Magellan's illegitimate son, Cristóbal Rebelo, all with swords drawn. Magellan leaped at Cartagena, catching the Castilian by the ruff of his shirt, and shoved him into a chair. "Rebel!" Magellan shouted. "This is mutiny! You are my prisoner, in the king's name!" At that, Cartagena barked at the other traitorous captains, Quesada and Mendoza, to stab Magellan with their daggers. From the way he spoke, it was apparent that the three of them had plotted to overthrow the captain general, but now, at the crucial moment, lost their resolve to act. Seizing the initiative, Espinosa, in his role as alguacil, picked up Cartagena and shoved him out the captain's cabin to the main deck, where he was secured to stocks and tended for common seamen who had committed minor offenses. Quesada and Mendoza pleaded with Magellan to free Cartagena, or failing that, to release him into their custody. They persuaded Magellan that he had nothing to fear from them, and he agreed to free Cartagena on condition that Mendoza confine him aboard Victoria. Cartagena was immediately relieved of command. Had he chosen, Magellan could have convened a court-martial and sentenced Cartagena to death. As captain general, he would have been within his rights because Cartagena had plotted to kill Magellan. Nothing could be more serious. But Magellan was acutely aware of Cartagena's privileged position and concerned that executing or severely punishing him would be inflammatory. So for once, he erred on the side of caution. The lack of disciplinary action made it a certainty that the irascible Castilian would continue to challenge Magellan until only one of them remained. With the brief mutiny at an end, Magellan ordered the trumpets aboard the flagship to sound, alerting the other ships, and he announced that henceforth San Antonio would be commanded by Antonio de Coca. Stripped of his command, and having learned nothing from the experience of his failed mutiny, Cartagena grew intensely resentful of his inexperienced replacement. From that moment, he burned with a desire for revenge against Magellan. With Cartagena removed from power, at least temporarily, Magellan turned his attention to his long-delayed crossing of the Atlantic. Magellan ordered the ships to set a southwesterly course toward Rio de Janeiro. Learning that Concepcion's pilot, João López Carvalho, had visited Rio several years before on an earlier expedition, Magellan brought him over to Trinidad to serve as pilot. At about the same time, Francisco Albo began keeping a navigational log intended for use by those following in the wake of the Armada de Malacca. Neither of these expert pilots knew of the South Equatorial Current, which carried the fleet west of its intended heading. Rather than Rio de Janeiro, the fleet raised Cape St. Augustine, some distance north of their intended destination, on November 29th. Here, Pigafetta relates, the fleet paused to take on fresh food and water and quickly resumed following the Brazilian coast in search of Rio de Janeiro, as the best navigational minds aboard the ships puzzled over why they had veered off course. Finally, 2 weeks later, on December 13, 1519, the fleet entered the lush and gorgeous Bay of St. Lucie and approached the mouth of the River of January, Rio de Janeiro. Magellan had arrived in the New World.